Based on electoral power is what it's going to come down to.
Well, that's exactly right.
It's elected. It's where the votes will fall out.
All right. Good afternoon. It is 3 p.m. October 28th, 2009. This is the North Dakota Public Service Commission, Kevin Kramer, Tony Clark, and Brian Kalk meeting in a special meeting for the purposes of dealing with one agenda item, which is in Commissioner Kalk's portfolio. Commissioner Kalk.
Thank you. Item number BK1, case number PU09686. I move the commission adopt the order granting AT&T Communications of the Midwest, Inc.'s request for a block of 1,000 numbers in the Bismarck Rate Center, case number PU09686.
Second.
A little background on this. On October 14th, AT&T submitted a request to the Neustar pooling system for additional 1,000 numbers out of the Bismarck area. It was a very specific request to meet the needs of an investment center here in Bismarck. They needed 40 numbers that were not in a 239 block. Neustar denied this request based on the FCC requirements. AT&T then submitted the request to the PSC. We actually just held a work session on it earlier today and found that the request made sense. This order it gives them within 180 days to implement it, and they are planning on, we're asking them to send back the unused portions of the block of 1,000, which roughly means 960 numbers will be coming back to the pooling system.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Anything else for the good of the order?
Can you mention why this makes sense?
Well, they want a very specific request to meet the needs of their customer service center, and so they don't want a 2, 3, or 9 lead-in. And so by giving this extra block, they can meet the requirements of – that was a question that we had of why they need the specific one dealing with their dialing system.
Yeah, what it relates to, Dale, is this customer has clients all over the country, and what they want to be able to do is have shortened dialing, you know, like within the state system, you just dial 8 and then the extension, so you have 1 plus 4 dialing instead of having to dial all 7 or potentially all 10 digits. And so they have specific requirements with regard to what prefixes they can have, and by allowing them to have this particular block, they'll be able to implement that here in North Dakota. We asked the question. What happens is if they have this internal company dialing, then they don't face long-distance charges within their company. It simply goes out over the OIP. So it helps with this company's calling, particular calling pattern.
Could you you all have been listening to the cap and trade debate. Could you just talk about what you were getting out of it?
Well, for that is a terrible way to ask that.
Well, what I gleaned it when I first saw the Kerry Boxer version of the bill, it looked to be even more extreme than the House version. The aggressive nature of the allocations, it just seems to be a more extreme bill. And what I've been watching the testimony is that they're basically just lining up and minimizing the impact of the economy and saying we've got to do something now. And like we were talking about earlier, I believe it'll come down to electoral power, that the states with California, the New Yorks that have the electoral votes are trying to push this through based on that. Our senators are in a unique position to do what's right for North Dakota, but their party is pushing them hard to go the other way.
I think it's pretty clear in this particular set of hearings, which is through the Environment and Public Works Committee, that Senator Boxer has whatever votes she needs to get her particular bill through. And I think everyone sort of understood that going in, that this Kerry Boxer bill is really the far, far left extreme version, and they know that they can get whatever they want to get through this particular committee because of the votes on there. But it's rather remarkable just sort of the lack of intellectual honesty on a lot of the debate here. There does seem to be just people talking from their talking points about this, not really acknowledging the concerns that those of us in the heartland have. I think it's without dispute that all of these bills, but this one in particular, would be a massive transfer of wealth from states like North Dakota to the East and West Coast. But even when they do acknowledge that there's a major problem, such as one bit of testimony that I just heard, there was a Democrat senator from the East Coast who said, well, you know, those of us on the East Coast have been helping you all out with floods in the Midwest, so what goes around comes around, and basically it's just your turn to pony up. I mean, if that's the the depth of where this debate's going to go, I don't hold a lot of hope for cap and trade in the U.S. Senate.
Well, it clearly illustrates that what's being debated is a political agenda, not an economic agenda, not a climate agenda, not an environmental agenda. But then that's always been clear to me, that what they're debating is not about the environment. If it was about the environment, it wouldn't have so much financial penalty attached to it. The other interesting thing about watching the debate and watching the two forms of cap and trade is that they're trying to sort of reserve the pain for after the next presidential election, which only further illustrates how political this discussion is as opposed to sincere it is.
Well, I just to the Dale, the we did submit written testimony as a commission for the hearings. So that'll be entered in. But also, I mean, I believe there is a need for some type of energy bill that gives some certainty out there so we can continue to build projects to meet demand. But they're just strictly, like Kevin said, a political agenda, but there's no desire to actually solve the energy challenges of our country, which we are positioned beautifully with our coal, with our oil, with our wind, with our natural gas, our biodiesel. So I'd like to see some certainty in an energy bill come out of D.C. and scrap the climate part of this.
It's never made sense to me that we would punish fossil fuel energy development in the United States while continuing to send $1 trillion to other parts of the world to import oil from dictators who use that money then to terrorize innocent Americans. That's never made any sense to me. It's very short-sighted and very political in nature.
I understand that the North Dakota now ranks as the fourth oil producer among states.
That's true. I was kind of surprised when we surpassed Oklahoma as the fifth producer, and then it was announced that in September we surpassed Louisiana as the fourth leading producer. And, I don't know how much higher we can go, but I do know that I've talked to enough people in the industry to know that there is a lot of planning going on for much greater investment in recovering oil from the Bakken and perhaps the Three Forks as well. Well, you just see what investment EOG has made in Stanley and a new headquarters and in a rail facility, and you see the investment that Hess has made in Tioga and their new office complex up there, and then you just only have to drive around northwestern North Dakota and western North Dakota to see that it's serious. But what's kind of interesting when I talk to people in the industry is that while even during the sort of the downturn for a while there in oil prices, when companies were forced to sort of target their investment even more clearly, the target was North Dakota and the Bakken, while other parts of the country and other potential plays were sort of taking a back seat. The Bakken was always front and center. So yeah, it's a remarkable time in North Dakota, and I just hope we can get enough infrastructure and pipeline infrastructure built to continue to make it available to markets and shorten or shrink that discount that our producers get for a price.
You know, the irony of getting back to the cap and trade and talking about certainty, because sometimes you'll hear the proponents of this say, well, this is a way to bring certainty so folks will know where to invest in the electricity grid. And to me, it's a very specious argument. I mean, the reality is that this doesn't create any certainty at all. I mean, cap and trade is just simply a market where you create this sort of Wall Street-style market for carbon credit trading. It's not even a physical commodity. We've seen what happens in markets. No one can predict from day to day or year to year where they're going to be. It really provides very little guidance to regulators or utilities what the price of carbon would be at all. All it does is it drives up the cost of electricity with no discernible benefit to the environment that we can tell.
There's also a piece, too, that we've been following with on allocations. The allocations you would think would be based on the actual amount of CO2 that you emit. Well, they're playing politics with this allocations. They're giving allocations to companies that don't even emit CO2 so that they can potentially make money in this CO2 market. It's politics at its worst right now out there.
Allocating any allowance less than 100% of what's being emitted at the time that the bill passes is punitive, obviously. To make it anything like that retroactive makes no sense whatsoever.
Sure. And there's a big reason for it, which is that some of the states where they need senators to vote for this have lots of nuclear power, and they want to create a huge windfall for these nuclear power producers, which basically means people in North Dakota pay more to send money to markets where there are lots of nuclear power on the East Coast.
I'm sorry to ask about this, but I missed this earlier, but could you just explain what the reservations are about the Otter Tail Economic Development Fund as it's part of the rate settlement with that company?
Sure. We had the work session yesterday to go through the settlement agreement between the two groups, and during the work session it came out that I would say the three of us were a little uneasy about the Economic Development Fund, and we asked for some more information about it. So based on the information we received, it could result in another work session. It could even result in the whole thing being opened back up again. But I believe, speaking for myself, it was just trying to get a good handle on where exactly that money, the $450,000 that was listed in there, where that's going to be spent and what the rules are with that.
Yeah, the uneasiness, I think, is really over the appropriateness or the questioning of the appropriateness of this fund at all. Is this an appropriate use of ratepayer dollars while investing $450,000 a year in economic projects in various communities throughout North Dakota may provide some community or social value or benefit, may even leverage other public and private investment dollars, and may even create some jobs or some wealth in a community. None of those are standards by which we measure rates. We measure rates by whether or not it's good for the ratepayer. Does it stabilize the electric infrastructure and provide reliable electricity? Does it keep rates down that might otherwise go up? And I think in this particular case, it's important to put into context that this fund was first started a long time ago when Otter Tail was earning revenues well beyond what they were allowed. And so rather than refunding $1.3 million back in rates, the commission decided to refund $1 million back in rates and use $315,000 per year for an economic development fund. It was also at a time when public economic development was, you know, a little hotter than it is today, perhaps, when the economy wasn't quite as strong. And so we were, as a state and as many states, were engaged in more creative type of programs to encourage economic development and investment in communities. Today, we sit in North Dakota at a time when our economy is very strong, when economic development, especially public economic development, is under tremendous and appropriate scrutiny. And so we're just trying to apply that same level of scrutiny.
I've had long-term discomfort with this particular program. Otter Tail is the only company that operates a program like this. And it did result from a settlement in the late 80s, and every few years since I've been on the commission, we get a report from Otter Tail that the money is being spent on various projects. But let's not forget, the money comes from somewhere. This is not free money. This is money that is raised from other ratepayers and then is given to other economic development projects in the community. And it's been about $318,000 per year since the commission in the late 80s put this in. This is the first chance that we as a commission have had to review this particular program as part of a rate case. As proposed in the settlement, it goes up from $318,000 to $450,000. I already had philosophical concerns at the lower amount. It makes it more uncomfortable for me that it's being raised. There are the other utility companies in the state that have programs designed to relate to economic development are typically in the form of a tariff, where if there's a particular project where the utility believes that a reduction in the rate that a new company would pay would in fact be a benefit to all ratepayers because it might spread out costs over a greater rate base, then they can come to the commission individually and ask for that, and they can build the record and build the case. Here we have none of that accountability. What you have is basically an economic development wing within Otter Tail engaged in an economic development business. As I said, they report to us and talk about the projects they funded, but there's never this tie back to exactly how that saved all the other ratepayers' money, and that to me is a great concern.
You know, the interesting thing about this $450,000 as well is that it's it's a significant portion of the increase that's being proposed. I mean, the original increase was requested was a little over $6 million. The interim increase was about just under $5 million. The settlement calls for an increase of just over $3.5 million. So $450,000 is a significant portion of that increase. And we're not, you know, unlike 1988, we're not talking about a refund of rates. We're talking about an increase in rates. And, it, you know, I think that really begs the question, is this an appropriate use of, you know, 1/7 of this increase?
Is there, I mean, you mentioned, what kind of data do they present to you about how this money is being used? Is it just where it's spent?
We have these, you know, quarterly periodic information exchange meetings with the utilities, and in the past when they've come in, it's typically they list the amount of money that's gone out. I think the commission at the time the order was made in the late 80s had a specific targeting of how this money was to be spent, so that it went, some went to matching grants, some went to other types of programs, and they report on how that's spent. And then just generally speaking, it talks about the quote-unquote number of jobs saved or added. But it, again, as we've seen in other areas of economic development, that's a less than exact science sometimes. And at least from my perspective, when you're talking about a utility company getting into this, it needs to directly relate back to rates that other ratepayers pay, and to ensure that, that the rationale for this is to lower everyone's electric bills and not just to become an add-on fund to other economic development efforts that are going on in the state. Because if you don't have that kind of accountability, then you raise the question, well, if $450,000 is good, wouldn't $1 million be better? And why isn't $3 million the right amount? And there has to be at some point a payback to other ratepayers. And to this point, I don't think that's ever been quantified.
The one thing that they always report to us, in addition to the individual investments, where they were, how many jobs were created, is how many other dollars were leveraged, and whether that's SBA dollars, local economic development dollars, state economic development dollars, or even private investment. And again, that's all well and good, but as Tony said, it doesn't relate back necessarily directly to ratepayers, and I frankly don't want to be like Joe Biden and have to explain how the stimulus bill really did retain this many jobs. You know, I'd like to see how it kept rates lower.
Well, I was just, one of the things I was wondering about is this essentially lead to a scenario where you have electric ratepayers in Devil's Lake helping to pay for grants that benefit Wampanoag without any real
Exactly.
That's exactly right.
Or even the ratepayers in Wahpeton, for that matter.
I was thinking too about if I read correctly, the way the rate increase is structured in the settlement, it's the commercial ratepayers pay, or the large ratepayers don't pay any increase, and the
residential
smaller. Well, basically, you're having a rate increase that's primarily going to residential customers, mm-hmm. and a good sized portion of it is going to an economic development fund, which will probably not benefit residential customers directly.
That's exactly correct.
Yeah, and I don't know that I'd say probably wouldn't or wouldn't. Our point is that can you prove that it does? Can you prove that it benefits ratepayers through rates? I mean, there are all kinds of benefits. You could talk about social benefits, community benefits, all of that, and that's fine for somebody, but my question is it appropriate for ratepayer dollars at a time when energy costs are going up, not down? If we were, you know, if we were on the other end of this, going back to 1988, it might be one thing, but that's not what we're talking about. And even then, I'm not sure it's appropriate philosophically, but at least it's a lot easier to swallow. But we're talking about raising people's rates to then, you know, redirect that money to public sector economic development.
I mean, you used to be the economic development director. Wouldn't you thought this was a swell idea at one point in your career?
You know, in all honesty, Dale, you may recall, even when I was a state economic development director, I was far more interested in public policy that encourages and incents investment than I was in making public investment. frankly, I've always been about creating an environment that attracts investment. I mean, it's kind of like talking about would it be better to cut corporate income taxes or to raise corporate income taxes and redistribute those tax dollars for investment? I would fall probably on the side of cutting the corporate income taxes, and that's just created a business environment that's friendly to investment. We don't have to contrive one.
I can tell you that in my time on the commission, I have had lots of folks from the economic development community, chambers of commerce, businesses, who've asked for North Dakota's cost of electricity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how do you have a competitive advantage over other parts of the country with regard to your cost of electricity? No one has come to me and asked what economic development programs are funded by your utility companies. Site selectors take energy costs into consideration far more than they would a utility economic development fund.
It's been one of the top five issues pertaining to, you know, used by site selectors in the last several years, which is another reason why cap and trade is such a lousy idea, because it hurts your competitiveness globally. Site selectors continue to rate energy costs as a very high priority in making a site selection and investment determination. So why we would put ourselves at a global disadvantage with China, as though we don't have enough global disadvantages, is way beyond me.
Well, and this recent press release today that only one state has added jobs since the stimulus package, quote-unquote, it's North Dakota. And it's not because of the stimulus package, it's because of our energy industry. That's why people come here, because we have low-cost energy and good people to work hard.
Anything else we can help you with?
I surrender.
Thank you, Senator. Bring in the next one. If there's nothing else, we'll close this raucous meeting.